Your Monday edition of Justice and Drew is underway. One down, two to go, John.
It can take its time.
The week has begun.
It can take its time. I'm happy to be here. A little bit later on this hour, Star Tribune, Minnesota legislature should listen to the majority on gun laws. Yeah, it's so easy to have an opinion, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so easy to have an opinion.
I know. Hey, let's put out a skewed poll that's worded in a way to get the exact response we want.
Yeah.
And then make demands on the legislature that they listen to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, how about not?
Let's have a minority group of individuals in size who answered in a majority in a poll be the ones to decide the will of the people.
Right.
That's not how this works.
No.
That's not how this works.
Silly, pesky Second Amendment kind of gets in the way. Joining us now, powered by our friends over at Randy's Electric, is our D.C. correspondent from the Institute for Liberty, Andrew Linger.
Good morning, gents. Have you guys seen this group? There's some group called Hunters Against the NRA.
No.
It's on Facebook. A couple of friends of mine have been sort of reposting their stuff. I can't figure out if it's a parody account, though. It seems too insane, too over the top to be anything but parody. I mean, it's sort of entreating people. Unless you're a supporter of this group, you are not allowed to share our posts, which is just idiotic. But it gets down to the sort of the same thing, this disproportionate opposition, not opposition, but I mean the idea of opposing the Second Amendment leading you to just behave in this idiotic way.
There was I don't know if I've told the story here, but just real quick, working in San Bernardino in Southern California, and there was a mall there. It was called the Inland Empire Mall, and the mall ended up essentially being taken over by local gang members. The gang members would go and they would just walk the mall daily, and people didn't want to go do business there. Fights would break out all the time in the mall. So the owners of the mall renamed the mall and changed all the decoration to the Carousel Mall. So all the logos and everything inside was all done in carousels and horses and whatnot. And
very pink and kind of girlish and childish.
The gangs didn't want to hang there anymore. My larger point here is maybe the NRA just needs to rebrand itself. Something really sort of, you know, benign having to do with rainbows and unicorns. You know, the National Rainbow Association. They just rainbows happen to be supportive of guns. Let's go that route. So,
go ahead.
Full disclosure, and I don't know if Sam and Drew even know this, but I call Andrew Langer every morning before the show. We have a discussion about the talking points before we go on the. He's really the guy. You know, it's not really me speaking every day. It's Andrew Langer because we're tight like that. We mentioned earlier there is this New York Magazine article, "The Strange Cocoon of Trump and Hannity, Two Friends Who Like to Talk Before Bed." I sent it to Drew and sort of did the "Is this real life?" I mean, this is a lengthy expose over some alleged sources who claim that Trump calls Hannity every night before he goes to sleep.
Well, that Hannity calls him as soon as he gets done with the show. Like
true.
10 o'clock at night, Hannity turns around and calls the president like they're a couple of high school juniors, gabbing about what happened during the day, which is essentially how the article makes it out. Now, understand, right? This is part of a series of these bizarre articles that have come out, things that have come out in the last week. I mean, this is Olivia Nuzzi's piece. You have this bizarre George Will piece that I know we're going to get into, where he just takes these swipes at the vice president, which is very strange. But this one is interesting, obviously because of not just because of the fact that it's once again like all of these things, based entirely upon sources who are completely unwilling to go on the record on this. But also like a lot of these other pieces, has this elitist, arrogant tone. I mean, at one point, the phrase, I'm not sure if I can use the word witchy that starts with B, witchy little grenades.
Right.
And it's like, you know, why? I mean, this is clearly it's being written for a particular echo chamber New York. I mean, it's New York Magazine. So it's being written for a very specific New York, L.A., you know, coastal audience. And again, this sort of it circles back to some of these other stories that we've seen in the last week, this poll in the New York Times, you know, liberals, you're not as smart as you think you are. Other folks talking about the, you know, the echo chambers. This is emblematic of once again, everything that is wrong with the coastal elites and how they perceive themselves in the world.
Is this, how much of this is, do you think is indicative of where the criticism of Trump is headed, or how much of this is really more indicative of what you mentioned a moment ago, that New York Magazine is tailored for a specific audience, so an article like this is really created and put out there to serve that audience?
Well, let's keep in mind, I mean, you know, the Trump administration is coming off a series of massive successes in the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's really undeniable. You know, setting aside whatever may happen on the foreign policy sphere with Iran, Trump pulling out of the Iran deal is major for his base. Bringing the three people home from North Korea, setting up the North Korean summit, the economic news is undeniably good. The fact that it's come out that the Mueller team indicted a corporation that no longer exists. I mean, all of these things are good news. And so pieces like this and the attacks on the vice president are all part and parcel of a media that it's like they're holding. Most of your listeners will understand this, Oobleck, or what's the stuff that they're doing, the putty that kids are making now, slime. It's like they're holding slime in their hands, and they're trying to squeeze it tightly. And, of course, when you squeeze it tightly, it just oozes through your fingers. They can't get a grasp on this guy. Yeah, I'm being intentional by saying that they're slimy. But this is how they're gonna go after them, because they have nothing of substance to offer here.
Talking with Andrew Langer, powered by Randy's Electric.
Yeah, it does seem like, you know, our national political discourse and coverage has become nothing more than really gossip, because none of the negativity, you know, that you see in all the reporting has anything to do with policy or actions that the president has taken. Because there's not much there for them to go after. So it's all gossipy. It's, oh, somebody in the White House made a tasteless joke about John McCain, and they haven't apologized yet.
Yeah, you know, it's like, first of all, it's Kelly Sadler, what she said publicly is nothing that, you know, the vast majority of us haven't thought at any particular point in time vis-a-vis John McCain on either the right or the left. And so, yeah, listen, it's unfortunate that it got out there. But again, this points to, and this is probably why Kelly Sadler hasn't responded, because it comes out of this unsubstantiated sourcing. Nobody's willing to go on the record. And I think I've mentioned this before. You know, one of my favorite movies is All the President's Men. Both the movie and the book are what originally got me interested in politics so many years ago. And, you know, at one point, Jason Robards, playing Ben Bradley in the movie, you know, yells to all of his team, when is somebody going to go on the record in this story? Very frustrated about this, because there was a time when somebody had to go on the record in order for something to be news. And or at the very least, you'd have to get a double or triple confirmed. But now, what passes for journalism in America in 2018 is, you know, somebody says that Kelly Sadler said something rather unkind about, you know, senior senator Crackpot from Arizona, and therefore it's all of a sudden become newsworthy. You know, not that John McCain didn't do and hasn't taken votes that have been petty, personal, and vindictive, specifically because of his animosity against the president.
Right. Get into this George Will criticism of Vice President Pence, because really it just kind of came. It came down to, that's right. Well, I'll let you dive into that. But it really just came down to Pence is a really good guy, and George Will decided to take him to task for being a really good guy, and then used a bunch of words that people didn't specifically want, that nobody knew existed.
Yes, I've added a new word to my vocabulary. Listen, I get accused of using a lot of $5 words. Oleaginous was a new one for me. That was one where I really, I mean, it means greasy, slimy. covered in an oil-like substance, oleaginous. Here's the interesting thing. You know, this George Will piece came out at roughly the same time. Steve Schmidt was on MSNBC trashing the vice president, using not quite the same $5 words, but essentially talking about his smartness. And in the interest of full disclosure, I've been a huge fan of Mike Pence's for years. Mike Pence was the subcommittee chairman of the very first subcommittee I ever testified for in Congress, and I have a great deal of affinity for him and his ability to grasp issues. He's a guy who is a deep, deep thinker when it comes to policy and politics. And so to have somebody like him get trashed by George Will, obviously George Will has a great deal of culpability because this went out under his name. My podcast and Institute for Liberty partner, Jerry Rogers, he believes that this is just some intern who is trying to impress his or her boss with their first piece out of the gate. Summer intern season starts in D.C. But nevertheless, there is this calculated effort on the part of the Never Trump Republicans to sully Pence. And I can only think it's because they are trying to, someone is trying to pull a Ted Agnew. They want to bring it to Spiro T, otherwise known as Ted Agnew, was Richard Nixon's vice president. Now he did some bad stuff. But the folks opposing the president worked very hard to get Agnew out, so that the president was even more vulnerable. Because the last thing the left wants, right? The last thing the left wants is for Donald Trump to be impeached and for Mike Pence to become president. So the Never Trumpers need to work overtime to get Pence out now, so that in the eventuality that Trump gets impeached, we don't have somebody worse on our hands.
Is that even a probability at this point? I mean, we've got an article later on this morning that apparently one of the Democrats' midterm strategies is going to be net neutrality.
One can only hope that that's what they're going to focus on. Neutrality, guns, and impeachment. We have to entertain the possibility because it's 2018 and stranger things have happened in recent years. Yes, it's possible that Democrats could retake both houses of Congress. If that happens, they will work on impeaching Donald Trump. Somebody clearly is trying to play. This is the thing, I guess, where we come back to. If the other lesson of 2018 and the lesson of the last 3 years of politics is don't be too cute by half. It never works. It won't work on you. And it's not going to work in this case. So,
if they're going to make net neutrality a sort of centerpiece of of the midterms, I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to run on, hey, vote for us and we will take full control of the internet.
I mean, they've at least convinced a sizable portion of the population to rally in the streets to give up their Second Amendment rights. Why not, get them there? And they are actively working to get folks to get rid of their First Amendment rights. Why not campaign on this? I will say this much real quick. I would commend folks to take a look at a great piece by American Commitments, Phil Kirpin, on how John McCain's illness is being exploited by the Democrats on this issue of net neutrality.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it is a good piece.
You mentioned Spiro Agnew earlier. Fun fact about him: if you rearrange the letters of his name, it spells "grow a penis."
There you go. Can you say that on the air, Drew?
I just did.
Get that drop.
I am not getting that drop.
Hey, let's.
It's just an anagram.
I mentioned earlier in the show, like, I'm legitimately frightened of the left's response of continued President Donald Trump's success. You know, you've got the embassy in Jerusalem and that ceremony taking place in less than an hour from now. You've got what's happening right now when it comes to North Korea. If it maintains the current path it's on, you have potential of big change in Iran as well. I'm legitimately frightened of how the anti-Trump crowd and the left are going to react and what they will stoop to if President Donald Trump continues to have the successes that we're currently seeing, if it maintains this trajectory.
Well, I mean, listen, we've already seen good chunks of this. The continued focus on the Stormy Daniels situation, the rumblings that Michael Avenatti, Daniels' lawyer, has been bringing up about Michael Cohen and Michael Cohen's retainership by various organizations. Here's where it's going to come down, right? They're going to post and print more outlandish, outrageous, unsubstantiated stories. They're going to blow up stories like John McCain carping about who he wants at his funeral. But what they're really going to try to do, and this is going to intensify as we move into the midterm elections, knowing how cowardly most Congress critters are, what they're going to do is they're going to target individual candidates for Congress who they think are weak, and they're going to try to get them to try to peel themselves away from the president. And thankfully, at the very least, you know, one of the upsides to so many retirements amongst the Republican Party in this cycle, and the downside is that it makes seats vulnerable, but the upside is that these are folks who probably didn't have the courage of their convictions to stand up for what they believe. Right? Because keep in mind, guys, remember, when all is said and done, and I want to point to this Charles Krauthammer piece in just a moment.
Oh, yeah.
But when it's all said and done, this president is doing more. Now, he is not a conservative. I'm going to say this. He's not a conservative. Charles Krauthammer talks about, he is a pragmatist. He is working to solve problems. It's a great piece. But this president is doing more to advance the core conservative agenda, the core free market limited government, than any of the candidates who were running. Again, I was not a fan of this president when he was running in 2016. I was not. Not throughout the primary, not up until the election, not even after the election. But the reality is this president has aggressively gone after the things that I've wanted. Regulatory reform, tax reform, size of government reform. Changing the balance between the legislative branch and the executive branch, going after and putting an America First strategy on foreign policy that, you know, in a way that no other rock-ripped conservative Republican, and I think about all the ones that I love, namely Ted Cruz. I think Ted Cruz would make a fantastic president. I think he'd make a better Supreme Court justice. But the reality is, I cannot say with certainty that Ted Cruz would have been going after this agenda this aggressively. That Donald Trump is. And that's why I think because Donald Trump is approaching it as a pragmatist does. He wants to solve the problems, and he has a negotiating style that is tried and true and tested, as opposed to the negotiating style of some of these others, that he's able to accomplish these things. Well, so anyway, that's where I go with this.
Well, and, you know, and it raises an interesting question, too, when you look further down the line of future presidents. You know, who else is going to be able to be in a position like Trump is in where he can be that, right? Because he's such an anomaly. You know, he being the outsider and his background, stripping away all of the controversy and everything else. We've said this all along. I mean, this actually kind of dovetails into that Charles Krauthammer piece really kind of dovetails into what many of us said about Trump, and that he was in a unique position to do exactly what we are seeing him do in a way that no other president would be able to be in that position.
Well, here's the great thing, right? He lays the groundwork. You're absolutely correct in that very few others following him would be able to negotiate in quite the same way. But on the other hand, if he is able to do two things, right, change the size and scope of the federal executive branch and shift more of that power back into the hands of Congress, which is something I said 2 weeks before the election. I said if Congress wants to make, you know, lemonade out of lemons, then what they could do is they could assert themselves and take back more of their power. So we're actually working on this in terms of the War Powers Act, right? So once Congress starts passing laws and takes that power away from the executive branch, it means successive presidents are hamstrung in their ability to change things down the road. And so that's why things like DACA and DACA being solved legislatively are so important. Because, you know, let's say you do get some mealy-mouthed conservative in down the road. You know, it'll be Congress that has the power to deal with these things.
And if these things are important to you, if DACA or the Iran deal or whatever issue it is important to you, you should be out there screaming from the rooftops to get Congress involved, because it is much harder to undo things when they're done legislatively. You live by the president, you know, executive pen, you die by the president's executive pen. It's like that with DACA. It's like that with the Iran deal. And it's like that with so many things. That's why, you know, I'll say it. I've said it a million times, and I'll say it a million more times. If this is important to you, you should be urging Congress to do their job and stop abdicating their responsibility to the executive branch. Andrew Langer, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff. Talk to you next week. John, I'll talk to you tonight.
Sounds good.
And thank you to Randy's Electric for powering this segment. We talk with our D.C. correspondent every Monday at this time.
Coming up, Star Tribune proving, you know, once again, that it's really easy to just have an opinion about stuff. Minnesota legislature should listen to the majority on gun laws, but it's not really the majority.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. 651-989-5855 is the phone number, or use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. Following our conversation with Andrew Langer in the last segment, David Belford, friend of the show, tweets, it's fair to say we all got a hell of a lot more than we bargained for with Donald Trump.
I think
it is fair to say.
It's absolutely fair to say.
You're coming at it from.
Yeah.
You know, for, against, ambivalent. We're all getting... just a lot more than we expected.
Are the history books that will be written
time.
Not for, obviously, our children, for Sam's eventual children will be very, very interesting.
Wait, you know something?
No, I was not implying that at all. I'm simply saying that's how far down the line the history books will have to be written. Maybe even your children's children at this point. But it's going to be very interesting to see how we look back upon this presidency and the effect that it has. Because regardless of how you feel about him, he is a complete anomaly. And we said that from the from the get-go. Yeah.
You guys, just think about it. Trump's tweets are going to be in history books.
I know. Yeah. I know. And it's just, and to what Andrew Langer was saying, it's almost like you can't have that level of pragmatism if you are truly beholden to either party. And he's not, right? Because he's not a conservative. I absolutely agree with Andrew Langer on that. He's barely a Republican. But he is pragmatic. And he is treating it with the things that were the success so far that we're seeing, in my opinion, is really based off of what many of us wanted to see, and that is his business acumen translating into, you know, sort of presidential policy and how somebody views a business and how you handle that.
Dom in Maple Grove. Go ahead, Dom.
Yeah, good morning, guys. You know, the deafening silence from the likes of George Bush, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, and all these people about what's happening with, you know, North Korea, China, Israel, ISIS, and even Saudi Arabia allowing their airspace to be used for flights to Israel. That's all I need to confirm that Trump's driving these people crazy. He has essentially caught all of them with their pants down, politically speaking. And, you know, John McCain's unfortunate rant is just the Oreo frosting on the cake for me. You know, people in Washington so used to politicians being themselves, meaning down and dirty in a sophisticated way, that with Trump, they're really fit to be tied and having a cow over his take-no-prisoners tweet storm presidency. You know, I can't wait for the Trump Presidential Library to be built to go see it.
What's that going to look like? Is it going to be all gold?
Yeah, did you see Back to the Future too?
Yeah.
Remember his casino? Yeah. We are
it's Presidential Library and Casino.
That's right. We are keeping an eye on the embassy being open, the U.S. embassy being moved to Jerusalem. There's a lot of looking at some of the headlines right now. A lot of protests taking place ahead of the opening of that embassy. The IDF apparently has already thwarted a terror attack. You know, we will, if anything were to occur, we'll stay on top of it throughout the show this morning. This is an incredibly historic moment taking place in Israel coming up in the next half hour. But there's also a lot of ratcheting up of tensions in the region because of it. And so we will certainly be staying on top of any of those breaking stories. In the meantime, Star Tribune, Drew, Minnesotans have turned out in force this year to make clear to lawmakers that they are fed up with the same old dodges that have blocked reasonable gun control safety reforms in the state.
No, they haven't.
So easy to have an opinion. But, Drew, they packed the state capitol. They want to make change. They called and wrote and rallied and testified. And a recent Star Tribune Minnesota poll showed that an astonishing 90% of Minnesotans support expanded criminal background checks, and 63% of respondents said they should raise the legal age to buy a gun from 18 to 21.
Yeah, because you wrote the poll, Star Tribune, to get those exact results that you wanted.
Nuh-uh. No, they didn't. That's what the majority of Minnesotans want.
Right.
That's
so just shut up and do it.
Right. You can't. That's not how it works. Look.
You elect people that form a majority mm-hmm. in the legislature,
mm-hmm.
and that is far more representative of what the majority of Minnesotans want
Nuh-uh.
than some stupid poll that the Star Tribune commissioned.
I'm playing the role of the Star Tribune. Nuh-uh. That's not true. And yet they go on to write, the GOP-dominated House and Senate have ignored those voices in favor of a far smaller group, extreme gun advocates, who go well beyond the majority of responsible Minnesota gun owners and hunters. Republican leaders have shut down debate, all in an attempt to forestall the will of the people who elected them. No.
If the people that elected, they wouldn't have elected them if that was really their will.
That's not how the will of the people is decided.
They would have elected other people.
Yeah, you don't get the minority in size voices in a poll who responded in the majority in that poll to get to decide what the elected officials are going to do. That's not how that works. I mean, that's what they're saying. They're saying we had a small snapshot in a poll, and the majority in that small snapshot should now represent the will of the people. That's not how it works. Here's the good news, though, they write, Drew. This cannot stand. Whether change occurs this year or next, it's coming. They want law enforcement and families to be able to get the court order that may save a loved one from taking their own life or someone else's. Minnesotans don't want gun show loopholes, private sales to be loopholed for those seeking to avoid the kinds of criminal background checks that this state's licensed firearm dealers conduct daily. I'm sorry, my eyes are rolling out of my head.
Jeez.
Yeah, you know what's funny? You get further into it. When you get to the third to last paragraph, they say this. Gun violence is not a Democrat versus Republican issue. They're a liar. Because seven paragraphs earlier, they made it that issue. And as a matter of fact, they say in the next paragraph, Republicans should pass their school security package as a standalone bill, knowing that Governor Mark Dayton would sign it. They're so full of it. They're so completely, completely full of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I mean, that's not, there's... They're supposed to be smarter than this, right? Aren't they supposed to be smarter than this?
It's not really a question of whether or not they're smarter than that. They're just pushing an agenda.
Yeah.
You know, they got a poll that helped them push the agenda, and the poll goes against what the legislature is going to do, and it goes against, you know, the fact that this is the legislature that the majority of Minnesotans elected to represent them.
Yeah. If the
but so they're like, ignore that and just pay attention to our poll.
It's pretty simple. Next time there's an election, if people feel differently on this particular issue, then they can vote for individuals who more closely align with what their viewpoints are.
Yeah, all the candidates out there that are looking to unseat incumbents, make this one of the central platforms of your campaign and see how you do. And you know what? If the majority of Minnesotans elect you, then by all means, have at it.
Maybe we should take a cue from the Star Tribune and run our own poll about how serious people take the Star Tribune.
Right.
And then if it turns out that our majority says the Star Tribune shouldn't be taken seriously, then they should just cease publication. If that's how that's supposed to work.
Good luck with that.
Okay.
651-989-5855. More Justice and Drew coming up.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice and Drew, along with Sam, 651-989-5855. She'll screen your phone calls. You can use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. You know, Drew, last week, Pioneer Press, we didn't get a chance to get to it. Shoreview raised its age to buy tobacco to 21. It joined Bloomington, Edina, and other cities. It's going to stop there, right? People are going to stop. Other people aren't going to take cues from Bloomington, Edina, and other cities, right? No, sorry.
Minneapolis City Council holding a public hearing today on a proposal to raise the city's tobacco buying age to 21. If the proposal is approved, Minneapolis would join several other Minnesota communities that have made similar moves in recent months, including, as you mentioned, Edina, Bloomington, Plymouth, St. Louis Park, and North Mankato. Joining us now, Megan Shea from the Coalition of Neighborhood Retailers. Good morning. Turn your mic on. There you go.
Oh, thank you. Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today. So we were talking during the break. Minneapolis City Council is going to have the public hearing today on the proposal. Is there any question in your mind right now that this won't get passed, that Minneapolis will not go ahead and move forward on this?
No, I think it looks pretty clear that the city council intends to move forward. They moved forward with the menthol ban last year. And restricting that to...
Despite the protestations from...
Despite retailers' objections and losing hundreds of thousands of dollars to their bottom line. And realistically, it's not effective either. And so trying to move to 21, the idea is to reduce youth access.
Right.
But I think we know that youth get a hold of whatever they would like to get a hold of.
What's give us a bit of talking with Megan Shea. Give us a bit of your background.
So my background is I've worked with this coalition of neighborhood retailers. It's the grocers, the retailer, Minnesota retailers, Minnesota grocers, Minnesota petroleum marketers, Minnesota convenience store association, and the Association of Tobacco Outlets. And so I've just been working with them on helping retailers try and have a voice in the city of Minneapolis, which is difficult, and also other local governments. But
it's one thing to have a voice, but you also need someone to listen.
Right.
You know, and that's been the frustrating thing is that retailers haven't been, you know, reticent to speak out. I mean, I hear it all the time. I hear, you know, from retailers, from restaurant owners, from club owners, from, you know, business owners from all across the spectrum. They're speaking out, but nobody's listening.
But nobody's listening. I think that they don't necessarily have a voice with the city council. There can be meetings and those types of things, but they feel like it's falling on deaf ears, that the city council doesn't really care about their business, the jobs that they provide, the property taxes that they provide, the wages that they provide, and even the services. I mean, they provide a lot of these communities with food and beverage and other resources, but that doesn't seem to be the value in this case.
Well, Drew, in your opinion, I mean, the individuals that voted in this, and of course yours too, Megan, but the individuals that voted in this particular, you know, body of individuals, we'll just say for Minneapolis, I mean, were they elected to do this? It doesn't seem like it was part of this is not your job.
Right.
Your job isn't to go and save humanity or save the young people.
Right.
I mean, were they voted into office with this in mind, or was it just part of that sort of, well, they're more activists than they are elected officials, and so we kind of expected this to happen.
Yeah, there's a swath of the electorate out there, and they seem concentrated in the cities that believe that their elected officials can turn them into a nice little utopia.
Well,
right? Everybody's on their bicycles and nobody smokes anymore, and you know all the businesses are paying what we think the businesses should pay, and not what the businesses determine the value of those employees are, and everything's going to be just fine.
Well, and I'd like to point out that not every city council thinks the way Minneapolis does, or even the metro area does. St. Cloud, Detroit Lakes, Mankato, all rejected the idea of going to Tobacco 21 based off of the role of city government. Mm-hmm. Is this what the city should be deciding and making islands of various regulations?
That's the key right there.
Right. Or should it be a conversation with the state or even the FDA, where the FDA is reviewing a lot of these things? These are legal products. They're available to legal adults mm-hmm. who can purchase them. Retailers in Minnesota have a fantastic compliance rate in the high 90s. In a lot of communities, 98-99%, where they're not selling to minors. So kids aren't getting cigarettes from retailers, but retailers are the ones who are bearing the burden. And in a lot of cases, they take out the possession and use of cigarettes. So you're not even holding youth accountable for smoking when they shouldn't be.
Right. I mean, yeah, because this doesn't address the issue of how minors are actually accessing this stuff in the first place. I mean, it's you move beyond the should the council be doing this and you sort of accept, okay, they're doing this. When you actually get to the argument of are you doing something tangible, they're not even having a good conversation or doing anything productive along those lines either.
Right. Because the idea is that you're taking it out of the hands of the 18-year-old who's going to the school with the kids, but at the same time, you're not banning possession and use, and kids can still have access and still have had access to cigarettes. And nobody's arguing the health impacts. I think that's been well-regulated and well-established. The question is really, what are youth doing? And Minnesota's done a fantastic job, can I just say, of convincing youth that and getting the health impacts out there. I mean, the tobacco use rates are way down, especially compared to other states. And if you compare that in the most recent state epidemiology report to, say, marijuana, they use that at 2 or 3 times the rate that they use cigarettes. So it's not about access. So if you go
you don't have these where I get annoyed because you don't, you know, these same people that are advocating to raise the smoking age to 21, a lot of the same crowd advocates for the decriminalization or legalization or loosening of marijuana rules, and it almost becomes like they are advocating one, you know, at the expense of the other. The health issues are still the same. I mean, for marijuana, for smoking marijuana or smoking a cigarette, you're still inhaling smoke and nasty things into your lungs. That's what causes the problem. That's where, you know, you have the health problems with cigarettes. Why is there such a different attitude towards marijuana than there is tobacco?
Well, I think it's easy. It's an easy target to try and say it's big, bad tobacco. It's big, bad.
There are people profiting off of it.
Right. There's big businesses, big corporations. But at the same time, you know, they're not the ones who are being punished here. It's the retailer,
right.
The Minneapolis retailer who becomes an island to other states, to other communities. So you're not really going to punish that big, bad tobacco person. That seems like an easy bully pulpit to get on. And these retailers have faced property tax increases, wage increases, paid sick and safe leave, and they've taken away, they've already voted to take away the menthol piece. You know, some of our retailers would argue, if you're going to go to 21, let us have menthol back, because what 25-year-old or 21-year-old shouldn't be able to buy menthol in their local store?
Right. So, again, talking with a representative for the Coalition of Neighborhood Retailers, Megan Shea, over Minneapolis City Council weighing today, raising the tobacco age to 21. What's the best that you can kind of hope for at this point in time? I mean, we already have these other, you know, Bloomington, Edina, other cities that have gone this way. It looks like Minneapolis is going to go this way. What's the best you guys can achieve right now, do you think?
So I think there's a couple of things. One, the menthol ban hasn't even gone into effect yet. The menthol mint and wintergreen restriction, that goes into effect August 1st. Trying to retrain and get everyone on the same page on 21 at the same time is going to be a huge hassle and a huge undertaking for these retailers, because they've got to update their systems and train their employees and do all those types of things now that they're going to be different than other communities. So we've asked for an extension of the timeline for 21. Let the retailers take in some of the new restrictions and then train their employees. So we've asked for an extended timeline, maybe an implementation date more into the fourth quarter or the beginning of next year if possible. And then I think the other piece is whether or not there should be a look at how retailers are doing and how C-stores are doing after this goes into effect, both with the restriction on menthol, mint, and wintergreen, and the restriction on 21. Are they actually achieving what they set out to achieve? That there's never any look back. So
right.
You'll hurt these retailers, but there's never a look back to say, hey, did we achieve our intended outcome?
That was my question. Okay, so you do this. And then, okay, what if it doesn't give you the numbers that you were looking for? What if the data doesn't change? Are they going to be willing to go back? I'm sorry, I make myself laugh. But you're right. I mean, what ends up happening then? So you because I think most of us assume it's not going to have, based off of, you know, just being rational and looking at the data, it's not going to have a tangible effect, you know, except for hurting the retailers.
3 miles away and go to a municipality that doesn't have this law in effect. I mean, in my perspective is I don't particularly care one way or the other, whether it's 18 or 21. Just have a decision, make a decision, and stick to it. But do it at least on the state level.
Right.
You know, stop with these little pockets of it's 21 here, it's 18 there. All you're doing is hurting the businesses that are in the 21-year-old municipality, because anybody between the ages of 18 to 21 that wants to go buy a pack of smokes is just going to drive a few extra miles.
Well, and then there's the unintended consequences of illicit markets, or where kids are going to try and get them from if they're not getting them from, you know, there's just a lot that goes into it. And the conversation at the state level will also have to do with what are the rights of an 18-year-old who can die for this country,
yeah,
who can adopt children and enter into contracts and purchase homes and all those other things. That's a conversation to be had. A lot of people point towards the Clean Indoor Air Act, starting at the local level and moving to the state. I think that's a question. Is this should be a statewide conversation? And then, you know, adult making a choice for their own health versus impacting somebody else's health.
Well, and that really is, that's what you raised the one of the really unfortunate aspects of this, is that you see so often arguments being made where people will point out, well, you're targeting this segment of the population. But when you go and you look at something like this, you don't see that, because you make a great point. You know, someone served in our country overseas and they're not going to be allowed to go and purchase a tobacco product on their own. That doesn't impair them in any way, shape, or form. I mean, you can already have an argument when it comes to alcohol, and, you know, we can have the discussion, but we're talking about something which doesn't impair you. It doesn't affect anybody else.
It's ridiculous. It's absolutely insane. Let's go to Jay in southern Minnesota. Good morning, Jay.
Morning. You guys just kind of were talking about what I was going to chime in on.
I'll try them on anyway.
If we're raising everything to 21, how come, I mean, you can sign a contract when you're 18. You can join the military when you're 18. If you can't trust them to smoke cigarettes or whatever, then why don't we just make being an adult the age 21?
Yeah.
I don't see how you can't, if you're responsible enough to do all these other adult things at 18, you should be able to smoke cigarettes and, I think, really buy alcohol. I mean,
yeah,
you got to grow up sometime.
Yeah. Once you're an adult, you're an adult. Let's pick an age and let's bestow all the benefits of adulthood on that age, whether it's 18 or 21, 20, 19, I don't care. Pick an age and just stick with it and be consistent.
Or we could just do what we did. We had a pretty good set standard already. You know, we already kind of had guidelines in place that were kind of working. What, talk about a bit of the, before we let you go this morning, and again, talking with Megan Shave, representative for the Coalition of Neighborhood Retailers, in regards to Minneapolis weighing raising the tobacco buying age to 21. The impact, the direct impact that this is going to have on the retailers themselves.
Yeah, so there's an estimation of between 2 and 4% is the market for 18 to 21-year-olds, but that's on top of already taking away menthol, mint, and wintergreen, which is actually closer to 40 to 60% of some of these folks' sales.
Right.
And now you're also going to increase minimum wage and property taxes and all those other things. So, yes, this is a smaller percentage, but it's a big deal.
But their margins are already thin. I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize they may bring in a lot of money, so it's easy for them to go and say, well, they've got plenty of money. It's like, no, you're not looking at the totality of that when it looks at how small those margins they actually have to work in are.
Well, and imagine that some of those stores close down in some of those neighborhoods that are providing food, milk, and other things for a community. You know, quote-unquote walkable community that we're trying to promote in Minneapolis.
Right, right. Well, but if they do, you know, then the kids won't have access to tobacco products. So, you know, problem solved. I'm being, you know, obviously sarcastic.
Well, I think the one last thing I'll mention is it's part of the reason or part of the drive for this 21 is a small uptick in use. That use has to do with e-cigarettes and vaping. And I guess the second question I would have there is there are things all the time as a parent that I'm going to have to educate my kids on that aren't available yet. You know, 16 years ago, I wasn't thinking I was going to have to talk about social media with my kid.
True story.
Safe. I certainly e-cigarettes and vaping weren't as prevalent, but the education has worked. I mean, the tobacco rates in the state have gone down significantly.
Nationwide, even.
Nationwide. And so the question comes to, again, the role of government, the kind of the role that convenience stores are playing and how squeezed that they're going to be. And moving to 21 is just another kind of shot at them.
Are they including e-cigarettes and vaping materials in this ordinance?
They are.
Okay.
Those products are treated as tobacco products.
Which, again, another separate conversation, but that's also ridiculous because there's no tobacco in them.
Right.
But it comes down to education and understanding what the role should be and parents getting out there.
It's really, thank you so much, Megan Shea. We are unfortunately out of time from the Coalition of Neighborhood Retailers. Pleasure to have you on. And it's, you know, I'm grateful for anybody who is standing up and speaking out on behalf of all the businesses in Minneapolis, because the city council sure ain't looking out for them. So thank you for what you do.
Thank you for taking time.
Keeping with the theme, you know, about that's not your job, we're going to get into the Met Council and their equity push.
Oh, boy.
Next. Just-